You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. My name is Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE, as always. So this week we'll be discussing a few different things. I'm going to be discussing my 2020 gear lineup, and I have an update in regards to my lens lineup. We'll also be discussing some camera rumors and releases, as well as price changes over at Flickr and some general updates from there. So as always, to begin, we'll just go over what I've been up to. So I've been shooting a bit more recently. I've been trying to get more photos for my 35mm f1.8 review, and there's some other posts for TPE that I've been working on. Because of this, you know, I've been out shooting more. Haven't really been doing as much still life, but that's going to be changing because I have a new lens, which I'll discuss later on. But otherwise from that, it's just been pretty quiet. I've been playing a lot of games, Dragon Ball Z Kakarot for any of the gamers out there. That one, you know, actually really good. It beats my expectations of it. I know it got very mixed reviews, but I find it to be actually a really good game. TPE updates, there's nothing really changed on the website. A few more posts have gone up, but otherwise that's it. I don't expect anything to change on there. I'm not adding any new features or anything new or drastically new anytime soon, but who knows, we'll see. Maybe there will be something. Now, first things first, I won't go over in too much detail, but there has been a few releases. So Fuji have announced their X-T200 as well as their 35mm f2 lens. Now, I've never actually shot a Fuji before. I did consider buying one previously when I was sort of contemplating getting rid of the M5, but I would happily shoot them if I'm given the chance. Like, the quality of the lenses seems to be really good. They have a lot of offer. Like, pretty much if you want to go APS-C and you didn't care about full frame, I would say Fuji would be an easy, easy choice. But, you know me, I'm a bit of a full frame junkie, so I have to have full frame, so that's why I've never really gotten into them. But this X-T200, I won't go over the specs because I did do a post over on TPE about it, which will be linked in the show notes. But pretty much the main feature that really attracts me to it will be that fully articulating screen, like what you see on Canon bodies. Most people think it's like a video or vlogger only thing, but it really helps, especially if you're doing still life photography. You can hold something like behind your subject, trigger the camera from back there, and be able to see without having to hold your phone or worry about that kind of stuff. When I had my 60 Mark II, I would rely on that heaps. Now, aside from the Flickr price changes, the main piece of news that I've found quite interesting, well, not so much news as a rumor, but Canon are supposedly going to be announcing either this month or next month their EOS R5. So the name sort of speculates, you know, or leads you to believe it'll probably be a mirrorless 5D Mark V. So, which is also interesting itself, that means they really, the DSLR really is dead. The 1DX is probably their last DSLR. I'll read you a few highlights from the specs over from Canon Rumors. So, it's rumored to have a 45 megapixel full frame CMOS sensor. It does supposedly have in-body image stabilization with 5 stops alone or 7 to 8 stops when used with in-lens stabilization, which is, you know, really impressive and something that I don't think we've seen before. 12 frames per second for mechanical shutter or 20 frames per second for electronic. If true, that would be very interesting to see, because pretty much that's what the A9 does. So that's Sony's flagship body. So if this body, which would technically be the 5D level and wouldn't even be their highest sports orientated body, can do that, that's something, you know, to definitely take serious. Less important stuff, dual card slots, well, important for some people. New battery, no touch bar. And one thing I find interesting is they reckon 8K at 30fps. Now, I seriously doubt this. I don't really personally care about video, but the one reason I really think this wouldn't be true is if they were going to put something like 8K video on something, it would be the 1DX Mark III. That's like their flagship top of the line body. I don't see them skipping that for the 1DX, but putting it in here, unless they're really, really, really trying to sell this as a hybrid mirrorless, or they want something to really push people into mirrorless. The other thing is whether their processor, the Digic X, will be able to actually handle 8K 30fps, because that's going to take a lot of power. And even then, I don't know, nothing really supports, very few things support 8K, so I obviously know people will downsample it and get extra sharp 4K, so that makes sense. or maybe it records at 8K and downsamples to 4K to get super sharp video, which to me seems like the most likely scenario. But one thing my conspiracy theory with all these kind of camera rumors is I often think the people who start these rumors aren't even someone who works for that company or someone has proper interest in that company. So say, we'll just hypothetically say Canon. Say I'm a Canon shooter, so I start Sony rumors to overhype a Sony bodies. Once that Sony body releases and it doesn't live up to that hype that I built up, I've pretty much, you know, pissed off all the Sony shooters and more likely to make them switch. This is like a super, super conspiracy, but you know, it makes sense. Like people just like to hype stuff up and then, you know, everyone's going to be disappointed when it comes out and it doesn't release. Like everyone said the 1DX Mark III was going to have IBIS, but does it? No, it doesn't. So that's another sort of example where I don't think it really disappointed that many people because I think there's been very few DSLRs to date that actually have IBIS. So it's not like it's something that was guaranteed or promised and they scrapped it last minute. But otherwise, there's not much longer till we get to see, you know, it's like the rest of this month. And trust me, the days, weeks, and everything goes really quick. So wait a few more weeks. We'll see what happens. See if there's an announcement at least. And I guess, yeah, then we'll know if what's true, what's fake. And if this body really is real and is leaked, and I can't wait to see what it offers. I can guarantee, be way out of my budget. And it'll cost me too much to switch back, but I would happily get one otherwise. So on to the next piece of news. Flickr, for the second year in a row now, has increased the pricing of their pro accounts. Now, this did cause quite a bit of controversy as well, which pretty much it always does because people don't like the price of stuff to go up, which, you know, I agree. In a sense, it is fair if a service is improving and they're constantly adding new features and new stuff. The amount of stuff we have seen from Flickr, as I've mentioned before, hasn't really been that large. There was a blog post done by Flickr, which was linked in the post on TPE, and I can link to that post in the show notes, but Flickr have said they have made, you know, X amount of improvements, and this, you know, to keep the lights on, keep the service alive, they do need to put the price up. They did do an offer where if you're a current pro subscriber and you want to subscribe for another 2 years, then you can get a discount. In a sense, you're resubscribing at the 2019 prices rather than 2020 prices, which is a good offer, you know, for us pro subscribers that do want to continue to use the platform and want to see it sort of prosper and keep going on. One thing I found interesting, because I actually asked Don McGaskill on Twitter directly about this from my personal Twitter account. I pretty much was just curious about, you know, when they plan to fix Explore and all that, which he directed me to a blog post by Flickr, which set out their goals. Once again, linked in the post on TPE. This post, it did mention that they've increased the amount of pro users that are showing up in Explore. Now, admittedly, I don't check Explore daily. I probably, you know, might get back into that, but currently I don't check it daily. One thing I sort of thought, at first I was like, oh, that's good, they are putting more pro users. But then when you think about it, people are using this as a storage site. So if they're using a storage site, that means they have a pro account. So if they dump 50 of their photos, you know, the exact same photo, that can still make it on there because technically pro accounts are still making Explore. What we want is we want it to be sort of very hand-picked, staff pick the top 50 photos. It's not just, you know, or an algorithm picks it because this has got this many comments and this many views or favorites. That's why it's going there, because people repost other people's photos. People repost lots of stuff. So just because it's a pro account and just because it's getting a lot of activity doesn't mean that is actually a, you know, original content by a photographer for other photographers. In terms, if I'm going to be renewing for the 2 years, you know, I love Flickr. I pretty much only post my photos there aside from my website. And I've started to post quite a bit on Twitter as well, but I don't use Instagram, Facebook, any of that. I'm considering whether I should start using 500px still or not. That one's, you know, I think kind of a sinking platform now. But I personally, I'm going to keep renewing it. I'm going to renew for the 2 years. It is expensive, but I do want to see Flickr sort of survive. Hopefully by the end of that 2 years, my money pays off and they actually manage to give Flickr more direction and make it more about the photos and more about photographers rather than it being half for photographers, half as a storage site. They really need that direction and to focus on one area only rather than just doing sort of jack of all trades and doing a little bit of each. Now, today's main topic isn't going to be like a very large one. It's more just discussing my favorite topic, gear, and sort of what my gear lineup will be for 2020. So as I previously discussed, I recently got the Sony FE16-35 f2.8 GM that joined me my 35 f1.8, my 85mm f1.8, as well as my 90mm f2.8 macro. Now, if you had listened to my episode where I did sort of a review, which was very recently about the 16-35 GM, I mentioned that it was best zoom lens I'd used. Absolutely love this lens, amazing quality, corner-to-corner sharpness. It even made me question, do I need my 35mm lens because it does 35 that well? So I'd spent weeks trying to decide what should I do. I was thinking of selling my 35 and getting the 24 f1.4 GM instead, and then getting maybe the 55 1.8 as something in the middle ground. So I pretty much decide I need to use this 35 more. I need to do the reviews for it, and I need to watch videos and see content that other people create with it, just to see, is it me just not opening up to this lens enough, just not treating it the way it should do? Because you know that empty hole the 35mm f2.8 from Canon left in my heart. So I pretty much started shooting with it more. I decided to challenge myself and just use that as much as I could rather than my 16-35. I did a few shots, and then the other day I was out with my 35mm f1.8 and I was taking a photo from Mrs. Macquarie's chair here in Sydney. So this location, you know, really popular, everyone's sort of there, and I could frame the Opera House as well as the Harbour Bridge really well using that 35mm. Now, if I had something wider, 24, 20, 16, 14, 12, there'd be way too much negative space. The way I ended up taking this shot was I had it framed sort of thing with grass, this like bush shrubbery sort of stuff from the bottom and on the sides of the frame. And in the middle is where you had the Opera House as well as the bridge. Now, I framed this so nicely with 35mm, but if I had used something wider, I'd have even more negative space. And it would just look really weird. I'd either have heaps of space in the sky, heaps of space in the water. And it would look wasted, even with, you know, if I tried that same framing. Whereas the 35mm done such a great job, sharpness with the CPL on the 10-stop filter, pretty much everything is really, really good. Then that made me think, like, do I really need 16mm? If I need to, I can just panorama. The only time I really use 16mm as well is for cityscapes, which, you know, as I mentioned, I could do a panorama, or when I travel. And even when I travel, if we look at my Auckland trip and even my one to San Francisco, I did use it a lot in San Francisco, but I could have done without it at the same time. And generally, like what I did in Auckland is I used the 35mm majority of the time. Then when I knew I had to use a wide angle, like Mount Eden, then I took out the 16-35. Otherwise, I could have easily gone with just the 35mm and I would have been fine. That and the 85 probably would have been an even better combo, which led me to make a decision. I have now sold the 16-35mm GM after owning it for a month. You know, some people would think I don't like the lens or that it's not a good lens, but it's not so much a case of that. It's more just, it's not for me. One thing I've always wanted is to have all primes, but I always thought that, you know, there wasn't really that option, because tell me how many primes are there that 16mm f1.8 or a 16mm f2 or even an 18mm. There aren't many. In saying that, I didn't know that, you know, well, I kind of remember reading about it, but it didn't take notes of it at the time or even sink in that Sony, Samyang now make an 18mm f2.8, and it's meant to be very, very good in terms of image quality, autofocus, and most importantly, it's only 180 grams. So if I barely use my wide angle except for cityscapes or, you know, massive landscape, wouldn't it make more sense just to have this one tiny light lens that I can carry in my bag and use a normal standard prime the rest of the time that's small and light as well? So I was thinking, you know, if I sell this, what should I do? So what's the one lens I've wanted for over a year since first trying it? The Sony FE24mm f1.4 GM, which I now own. There's some really good sales on it at the moment here in Australia. There's about 400 off on it as well. So I ended up picking it up. I haven't used it much, but I'm really, really happy with it. So pretty much what I'm going to do is I'm not really going to be traveling the rest of the year from what I know, because, you know, trying to save money, focus on work and my last year uni. But what I will probably try and do is either this year I'm gonna get that, or just before I travel next year, get that Samyang 18mm f2.8. But I'm gonna try and wait until next year, because a patent just came out from Sigma for about seven mirrorless lenses. Now, two of those lenses, or three I should say, interest me a lot. One of them was a 16mm f2. Now that would be perfect. Imagine having that, plus the 24 GM, plus the 85mm, perfect travel kit. Otherwise, they also patent an 18mm f1.8 and an 18mm f2.8. Now, being used as a UWA prime, like an ultra wide angle, I don't really care too much about the aperture, whether I get 1.8, 2.8, or f2. That honestly doesn't bother me. If I ever get into Astro, it probably will bother me, but for now, I don't really care, especially since I got the 1.4GM. I'm going to wait till the end of the year. If they do end up releasing these this year or next year, early next year before I travel, 100%. If I could choose between any of them, between the Samyang or those three Sigma lenses, I'll probably go the 16mm f2, assuming it's a small compact lens like 200, 250, even 300 grams isn't that bad. If I have that, then my travel kit will be 16mm or 18mm when I need to do my landscapes. My 24 is my pretty much all-purpose walk-around lens, and the 85 if I want to do some street or some bokeh shots, you know, so that would be my travel lineup. Then the 35 will be my sort of general purpose when I'm in Sydney, because I've been using the 24 a bit. I do like the focal length for like urban street, that kind of architectural walking around, but I find I still like the 35mm best for sort of people. They do have their distinction, and that's why I know I can keep both. They are similar but different at the same sense, so I'm happy keeping both, both lightweight as well, so if I ever did want to carry them both, it's not like it's going to break my back to carry them. The 85 I was thinking of selling recently. I had been testing it, like I'm going to post on my personal blog fairly soon, but a portrait of myself, like full body portrait as well as a landscape orientated portrait, just about testing the lens to see how I actually like how it renders the image. I'd still say an f1.4 lens renders nicer compared to this, especially that Samyang lens, but for what I use it for, like the 1.8 is perfectly fine. It still has a beautiful image quality, sharpness, everything still really good. It's just that tiny little thing, you know, that extra, maybe not the rendering, but the transition from in focus to out of focus, you'll find it can be a lot softer with an f1.4 lens. The 90mm macro is pretty much going to stay because there's no actual good alternative that I like at the moment. If Sony were to release like a 100mm f2.8 macro, 100% I'll sell the 90 and go for that, because I don't really like the bokeh on the 100mm wide open. When I say bokeh, I really mean the specular highlights, the way it sort of renders them. They have a really weird shape. So to summarize, my gear lineup for 2020, which I hope does not change, will be my A7 III, which definitely won't change because I refuse to get a 4 if they bring one out. Mainly because I feel like they're just doing half updates. Like, you know, iPhone does its performance updates, which is the S line, and then it's full, well, it used to be full redesigns for the full number ones. I feel like that's what Sony are doing. You know, the A7 R3 was a big, really big update. Now the 4 compared to a 2 is a big update, but compared to the 3, not so much. Same with the A9 too. But I'll pretty much have my A7 III body, my 24mm f1.4 GM, 35-1.8, 85-1.8, and the 90mm macro. The only thing that may change is adding that wide-angle prime, but I very, very likely will not buy it until next year, mainly because I don't need it till then since I won't be traveling till then. But yeah, well, that pretty much summarizes this episode. I will see you again in 2 weeks. The topic is sort of planned so far, but not 100%, so I won't give anything away till then.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe, and our social links will be posted in the show notes.